From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. So far, we've burned through half of the TARP funds. That's the $700 billion Trouble Asset Relief Program. Yesterday, President-elect Barack Obama requested that President George W. Bush ask Congress for the second half. That way, the new administration would have it available soon after the inauguration. So where did the first $350 billion go? Are we seeing any results? Here to help us understand the ins and outs of TARP is DeRoy Murdoch. He's a media fellow with the Hoover Institution on War, Revolution, and Peace at Stanford University. Hi, DeRoy.
Hi, Frey. How are you?
I am doing quite well. Tell us about this $350 billion. The Bush administration mostly focused on buying stakes and ailing banks, and critics say that that shored up Wall Street, but not Main Street. Do you agree with that assessment, that critique, and what did happen with the money?
I agree with that critique completely. This was not, this money may have been sold as a way of helping homeowners in trouble, a way of bailing people out of foreclosures and this sort of thing. But primarily what this money did was go to big banks and medium-sized banks. A lot of this money went to, essentially was forced on big banks, including healthy banks such as J.P. Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, and Bank of America. And the theory was that if a weak or sick bank took money from the government, people might think, well, this bank's not in good shape, so I better pull out my money and take it elsewhere. And so the notion was, let's not stigmatize these sick banks. Let's give money to the big healthy banks so that they will the unhealthy banks will be able to blend in among them. This strikes me as a bit like saying, well, we don't want to stigmatize people on food stamps, so we're going to give food stamps to wealthy people so they also will buy their groceries with food stamps. This is an astonishing thing. This is the ultimate in corporate welfare. Big banks like J.P. Morgan, Chase, and Bank of America essentially were forced by the Fed, or very much had their arms twisted by the Fed and the Treasury, to take $25 billion. Some somewhat smaller banks had to take $20 billion. So a lot of this money was just an enormous sum given to these big institutions.
Me ask, why did they agree if they think they didn't need it?
Well, I think essentially, when you're dealing with Uncle Sam, you essentially are given an offer you can't refuse. You know, okay, well, you don't want to take this money if you don't want to, but good luck next time you want anything from us. And I think that they were essentially coerced into taking this money. I don't know if they didn't literally have guns put to their heads, but when you've got the head of the Fed or the head of the Treasury and you're running a major bank and they say, we want you to do this, I think at that point you just say, yes, sir, may I have another. Now, it would have been bad enough had they done this happened and then these banks turned around and started lending again. Many of them have taken this money and essentially hung on to it as a rainy day fund paid for by America's taxpayers. I think another important point that I hope people will remember is that we're not just talking about $350 billion that have been shelled out already, plus another $350 billion that President-elect Obama has requested when asked to by President Bush. The entire bailout is not $700 billion or $1 trillion. The amount of money that has been shelled out between mainly since Labor Day, but throughout 2008 up until now, in terms of actual outlays, loans, grants, this kind of thing, comes to $3.35 trillion. This is according to the Washington Post's research up through the day before Thanksgiving. It gets even worse. If you look at the guarantees, the so-called backstops, all the commitments the government has made, the amount of money, according to the Washington Post, is $8.15 trillion. Now, I shared those numbers with Pat Toomey, who's the head of the Club for Growth, a former Republican member of the House of Representatives, and he said, well, those are pretty grim numbers, but I think they forgot something. They forgot the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac nationalization. I contacted the Washington Post. They said, oops, you're right, we forgot to include that. Once you put that in, the commitment number becomes $3.35 trillion, and the outlay number is $3.35 trillion. The commitments, the guarantees, all that stuff, that then goes up to $13.35 trillion. So we're talking about $13 trillion here that basically has been spent without much supervision, without much accountability, without much transparency, mainly since Labor Day. This is an enormous step into nationalization and socialization, such as I never would have imagined place in this country, particularly under a so-called conservative Republican president.
I was going to raise that because yesterday when President Bush gave his last official press conference, he mentioned that he was getting criticized by some members of his party for some of the economic actions taken in the last days of his presidency. And he said, well, I hope that if they were faced with a situation like this, they would do something, you know, even if it wasn't in keeping with what their fiscal ideology said. We don't have very much time, but do you think it was a smart move for this president, our outgoing president, to push the structure of this kind of a bailout?
No, it's calamitous. I lately in my op-ed pieces have referred to him as Comrade Bush. I think that he has turned out to be like a giant Trojan horse who in his last days has turned this into a socialist republic, and I don't think I'm being hyperbolic. We have nationalized companies in this nation in the last couple of months. We've got the federal government owning major shares of financial institutions, an insurance company, car companies. This is the kind of stuff I would have expected maybe President Howard Dean would have done had he been hopped up on steroids. To have a conservative Republican who claims to be one of the heirs of Ronald Reagan do this is one of the most dramatic and spectacular acts of political apostasy this country has seen. And many of us who supported him and many of us who believe in free markets are appalled and apoplectic over this. And certainly he could have done things that were market-oriented, or if they had to be big government-oriented, could have been much less so. They've engaged in an enormous expansion of government. Nationalization is now part of the American political and economic vocabulary. I never thought I would see this in my lifetime. And again, to have a so-called conservative Republican do this to this country and to his base and his party, this is just an appalling and spectacularly negative development. And I don't think he can leave the office soon enough as a result.
Okay, DeRoy, no small words. Thank you.
Thank you, Farai. Good to talk to you.
That was DeRoy Murdoch, media fellow with the Hoover Institution on War, Revolution, and Peace at Stanford University. He's also a syndicated columnist with the Scripps Howard News Service.